Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to this year-in-review kind of episode here as Minnesota's got their bowl game assignment. They're going to be playing Washington State in the Holiday Bowl. And Luke and I really just want to take a look back at this 8-4 season for what we, you know, we're 10 days removed from it now. How do we think it went? And different things like that, Luke. So I also believe there were a couple of listener kind of questions that we did get. I hope Luke or I can find those right here during the episode to try and answer a couple of your questions that we did get. But that's going to be basically the format for this episode. Derek is on assignment for this week. He has requested and he has been approved to be on the bowl breakdown episode. And then we're kind of just going to do another year in review after that. Maybe do it live somewhere. And so if you guys want to talk some Gopher football with us afterwards, but that's kind of be the plan for this episode, Luke.
All right. Yeah. Ryan, you know, this has kind of been a much scrutinized season and probably rightfully so, but you know, looking at this season, the Gophers were 8-4, you know, they have three of the last four have been 8-win seasons. And I think we should try and just kind of look at the, you know, where we've been in the past, where we are in the present, and maybe how this kind of, forecasts into the future, maybe a little bit. I know that, there are some people very elated to know that, Tracy Clay's got his extension. There are other people, well, I guess it's still not a done deal because nothing is signed, sealed, and delivered.
Right.
But the commitment has been made from Mark Coyle. And then there are people on the other end of the spectrum that, you know, couldn't be more upset. Probably won't be renewing their season tickets. You know, lots of disgruntled fans, and rightfully so, they have that opinion. But let's just look at this season. It basically as a whole. I think we kind of start. We probably should start with the offense and quite frankly, I mean, like it or not, they were better. I mean, the facts are the facts. I mean, you might be frustrated that the quarterback play wasn't good, but they went from 22 points a year to 30 points a year, from 2015 to 2016. And quite frankly, they were just better period on offense this year, all around outside of maybe the passing game, but they were definitely more efficient at scoring points.
They were. I think efficient is a good way to put things into perspective. They were pretty good in the red zone throughout the entire season. There was that streak to start the year where Minnesota was something absurd of like 14 of 14 in terms of turning red zone possessions into touchdowns and not settling for field goals. So as you mentioned, an 8 points per game increase is something in the right direction. And I can already hear the cynics in my head saying, well, yeah, it's because Minnesota played such an easy schedule, folks. I mean, the facts remain. They did score 8 more points a game during the entire season, as Luke said, 30 points a game during in all 12 games. And I believe during the Big Ten play, Minnesota averaged 27 points a game. So that's good for sixth in the Big Ten. That's a step up from last year's season. And a large part of that was due to this running game, which was able to do a lot of things. I believe they scored north of 30 rushing touchdowns, 33 on the season, only 8 passing touchdowns. And we'll touch on that a little bit later. But and it's because of these running backs. And Rodney Smith is an absolutely phenomenal running back. Again, and the fun part is you get at least one more season of him before he potentially really experiments with the NFL waters. If Rodney has the season, which I anticipate him to have next season, which is likely going to be similar to this season, I have a hard time seeing him come back. The reason I say that is you don't find a lot of Big Ten running backs that score double-digit touchdowns in back-to-back seasons and gain 1,000 yards on the ground and see them return for a third season. It just doesn't happen very often.
Right.
So Rodney Smith being snubbed is absolutely absurd to me. It's absolutely ludicrous. It's a joke. And what I mean by that is Rodney Smith was third team all Big Ten. That's a joke. It's an absolute joke. It's the media and the coaches just paying attention to who wears Ohio State, Wisconsin, and Michigan colors. Saquon Barkley should be justified on the first team as he was, but putting Corey Clement ahead of him is a joke. Putting Justin Jackson, I think that's fine because I think he's ultra talented. But Mike Weber being above him too is just – name me a running back in the Big Ten that did more with less, and I'll show you Rodney Smith, who gains 1,000 yards and 15 rushing touchdowns with an offensive line that was bottom 20 in the country in terms of run blocking. And you saw it in those last three or four games. He's able to do that with an offensive line that was significantly struggling to end the season. So Rodney Smith being effective on the ground, Mitch Leidner also being effective on the ground. He's one of the best red zone weapons with his legs that Minnesota's ever had at quarterback. And say what you will about his passing, and we'll get to it, but he is an absolute weapon in the red zone with his legs. Another, I believe he's got 33 rushing touchdowns, or 32 or 33 rushing touchdowns in his career. Someone that is tied for fourth all time with Marion Barber with those rushing touchdowns. And this season, once again, double digit rushing touchdowns for Mitch Leidner, 10 on the season. So you didn't get to see as much Shannon Brooks as we were thinking going into the season. Some of that is because of injury. Some of that is because Rodney Smith took the job because of Shannon being injured early, and he never looked back. And that resulted in far less carries, almost 100 less carries for Shannon when in comparison to Rodney. But as you mentioned, Luke, 30 points a game, 27 points a game in the Big Ten. That's a lot to hang your hat on. And that's an improvement from Jay Johnson when looking at Matt Limegrover's 2015. Some of that is because of the schedule. Some of that is because there was more efficiency from this Gopher team in turning those red zone opportunities into points. But in my opinion, I think that is a step in the right direction. And Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks being back for 2017 is also very bright.
Yeah, let's not overlook the fact, too, that, say what you will about the run blocking and the pass blocking and, you know the struggles they had there, some injuries, and I understand they were decimated in 2015, but look at the guys who played, right? These are guys that they identified, you know, during the offseason in the recruiting cycle that preceded this season, and they brought them in to stopgap fill this offensive line. Quite frankly, they were not in a position to succeed at offensive line, and they were found a way to patch it and make some semblance of a somewhat respectable offensive line for this 2016 season. I think credit has to go to Tracy Clays and Bart Miller and the whole offensive staff being able to get those guys in and basically stem a position group that really had a bleak future.
It's still a position that I'm wrestling with in terms of the future and whatnot. I think it is bright because, as you mentioned, think about where this position group would have been in 2016 if Clays didn't go out and get three junior college guys, because all three started the final game of the season against Wisconsin, one at left tackle. Actually, Vincent Calhoun did not play in that last game, but he started many games for Minnesota at right guard, and then Garrison Wright started at the other tackle spot. It's just a position that needed to get some new blood in there, because it's evidently clear that Matt Limegrover, in terms of evaluating talent at a level like Minnesota, didn't go well. Let's just put it that. And Bart Miller needed to come in, and he knew he had a lot to accomplish. And again, this is a very good pass-blocking offensive line. I believe that they rated within the top 20 in the country in terms of their adjusted sack rate. But they were a team that really struggled to open up some running lanes for their running backs. So they were a bottom 25 run-blocking team, but they were a top 25 pass-blocking team.
Yeah, definitely. From a pass blocking perspective, Ryan, they did seem to be much better. And that we really should segue and talk about this passing game because it's kind of been the much scrutinized part of this team all season. Everyone's aware of the struggles they had in the pass game. Everybody should be well aware of, at least my opinions. Everybody that listens to this podcast should be aware of probably my opinions that it's much more than just the quarterback. But it's easy to point at the quarterback who struggled this year in Mitch Leidner. You know, the stats kind of speak for themselves. And, you know, he was decent at with like 58% completion percentage. But, you know, he struggled with, you know, some big turnovers and big spots with the interceptions. He cut down on the fumbles this season compared to last year. Much improved there. But you know, the passing game, we didn't see the jump when he, you know, was supposedly healthy this year. And there's a lot that goes into that. You lose a guy like Brandon Lingan and it hurts, and you didn't have a lot of playmakers on the outside. It was just an all-around struggle passing the ball this year, and I don't know how it projects into the future, but I can't imagine it's good.
Yeah, let's stick with 2016. Leidner stats in Big Ten play, which is an area people really like to look at. Four touchdown passes, which is bottom of the Big Ten, and 11 interceptions, which is third worst in the Big Ten, trailing Purdue and Indiana, two teams that threw the ball over 300 times, and Minnesota only threw the ball 229 times. Mitch Leidner in Big Ten play had only one game without an interception as well, and I'm sure fans are well aware of his struggles against Wisconsin in the second half of games. So it was a year that was supposed to be a lot more than it was for Minnesota's passing offense. It starts with the quarterback. You know, we were supposed to see, you know, or we were projecting a step forward. I wouldn't say a leap forward, but a step forward for Mitch Leidner in terms of his development, in terms of his abilities to go through progressions, abilities to take a step forward in decision making and different areas of that. And you didn't see it. And I think he even may have regressed a little bit in the back half of Big Ten play in terms of locking on to, you know, specific receivers, a.k.a. Drew Ulatarski at times. You know, him going through his progressions wasn't always the greatest. And the thing that really just killed Minnesota in this passing offense was just decision-making. Too many ill-advised interceptions in the second half of games and Big Ten play. Just it never got on track. And as you mentioned, yes, some of that is the quarterback. I'm well aware. You know, when you look at Inches, four interceptions in the second half against Wisconsin. The first one is absolutely on him. He thought it was cover one. It was cover two. Didn't see the safety, who switched over, and he threw it right into his hands. Second one, it's more on Eric Carter because he ran the wrong route there. But Leidner shouldn't have thrown that ball when he didn't see him starting to get out of his break. Easy interception. Third and fourth one, I want to place some blame on the offensive line because they were rushing four guys. And two guys in both scenarios were getting to Leidner. Four versus five shouldn't happen, especially two unblocked. So this offensive line regressed against Wisconsin. But even still, when you look at the passing options, I mean, this is a much maligned discussion, I guess I would say, in terms of Minnesota's passing targets. Yes, Brandon Lingan is someone that Minnesota missed. There's no doubt about it. Minnesota missed a threat up the seam that had that in this offense for years with Max Williams. Brandon Lingan showed that this pass in 2015. And Minnesota didn't have an option in 2016 because Lingan was hurt for most of the games. And Nate Wozniak isn't a guy that can do much in the passing game. Colton Beebe is dealing with some injuries, and that's why you didn't see him do a whole lot in the passing game as well. Bryce Witham isn't ready either, so just no lack of passing game threat between the seams, or between the hashes, I should say, I think hurt this team. Minnesota's lack of wide receiver talent in terms of – I don't know that Rashad still took as big of a jump as I was hoping this season, because you saw the amount of 50-50 balls Minnesota was throwing in Big Ten play and his catch rate couldn't have been very good on those 50-50 balls. And that's just him. And again, we got into it in the Wisconsin breakdown. It's about him timing up that jump. Again, if it's a 50-50 ball, both guys have a shot at it, and more times than not, it's who can high point it. Well, still didn't always get his footwork correct that he could be able to launch up at the right angle to go up and high point it, because more times than not, he should be going vertically when he's jumping. He was jumping laterally. You know, you saw him struggle on some routes where Leitner overthrows him in the Nebraska game in the first quarter, where he slowed down his route to 80% before he picked up the ball again. If he runs 100% the entire time, it's a touchdown. I think Drew Olatarski is someone that needs more recognition, and he did receive third team all Big Ten honors, which was a little surprising to me. But you look at his stats on the season, 61 receptions for 787 yards and 5 touchdowns. He was targeted by far the most of anybody on this team at 33% of Mitch Leitner's targets went to Drew Olatarski, and he caught 64% of them. Not the greatest of catch rates, but it's a lot better than Rashad Still, who was targeted 12% of the time, which is fine. But his catch rate on those targets was only 47%, meaning half less, you know, more than half the targets to Rashad Still didn't end in completions. And again, and I'm going to place a lot of that on Still's ability to go up and grab the ball. Again, an all-state basketball player should be able to know how to high point the ball and box out a defender, but it was clear that Still was lacking some things there. So, you know, you mention it. How does this project out into the future? And again, a changing quarterback may do wonders for this offense. Again, I'm one of the founding members of Leitner Island with Justin Gard, well aware of it, you know, and everything. Mitch's last game is going to be against Washington State in the Holiday Bowl. And something I've really touched on a lot here on Gopher Illustrated in the last few days is this quarterback position projecting forward. You know, we've done a lot of talking about quarterback recruiting. How is it going? And what does 2017 look like? And I can tell you that it seems that Tracy Clays is extremely comfortable with going into the 2017 season with Demery Croft and Mark Williams as his quarterback. Seth Green and Demery Croft.
And Mark Williams could be an option too, but
I'm tired of Clays talking about Mark Williams at quarterback. He keeps talking about him as a quarterback when Mark Williams has not played quarterback since fall camp. He keeps talking about him in his potential at quarterback. Well, then why have you had him practicing at wide receiver the entire season? And again, that's a position from what I've heard. So the story goes, Mark Williams gets injured early in the season with a hand injury, and then he wants to go to wide receiver because that's the position he deems as the one that projects him for the fastest to get onto the field. So Mark Williams wants to play. He has an option between quarterback and wide receiver. He looks at wide receiver and he's like, yeah, I have a better chance to play there than I do quarterback right now. So your hope is that Clays and Jay Johnson are able to convince him to move back to quarterback, because from what I saw of Mark Williams at quarterback in fall camp, I think I said on KFAN before the first game, like, hey, I think he can be the starting quarterback for Minnesota in 2017. I hate that he didn't get any reps there. I hate it. I wish he would have got reps there during the season, but it's evidently clear Clays is very comfortable with going with Seth Green and Demery Croft. Seth Green is someone that this staff has talked up religiously throughout the fall season here, and I still think he has a long way to go in the passing game. I think that he's a better athlete than Leitner. I don't know that he has better breakaway speed right now than Leitner. I don't know that he's shiftier. I think he's shiftier in terms of laterally than Leitner. But is that going to turn into elusiveness? That's something that remains to be seen. I just think he's a better overall athlete at 6'4", 235 pounds. He's someone that I think could withstand the blows that a Minnesota quarterback goes through in the system a lot better than someone in comparison to Demery Croft, who Demery, I think, is the best pure passer on this quarterback. And he's been that way since he stepped on campus. I mean, from day one, he was the best pure passer on this roster. And that's been clear. And I think that's still clear. The issues with Demery are his
consistency.
Yes, that's the word I'm looking for. His consistency from rep to rep. He'll make one of the best throws you'll see in practice that day, and then the next throw he'll miss by 5 yards. So is that mental? Is that something with his mechanics? Is that something that's fixable? Is going to remain the option. So again, I'm tired of talking about Mark Williams at quarterback, because until he plays quarterback again, it's a moot point. And yes, Seth Green is going to be there, and he's probably the odds-on front runner right now, which I'm a little bit concerned about, because I've seen what he's been able to do in the passing department. I think he's got a ways to go there yet. But Demery Croft on the other side of the coin has durability issues in my eyes, because he's very thin, and him taking 10 to 12 hits a game in the running game from time to time is somewhere I don't know that he can withstand that and for more than 3, 4, or 5 games, but we'll see. So I think that when you look at 2017 quarterback, I think it's going to be between those three guys. And I don't know that it doesn't look like they're going to be bringing anybody in mid-year. So if Mark Williams doesn't move back to quarterback, Minnesota's got 2 total quarterbacks on the roster for the spring ball. And say one goes down with an ankle injury or something and is out for a practice, or, say 3 or 4 or 5 practices. Okay, Minnesota has 1 legitimate quarterback on the roster then, and I don't really know how to feel about that. The hope is Mark moves back, because if he doesn't, there are very, very little bodies there at the position. So it's going to be wide open heading into 2017 spring ball, that's for sure.
Yeah, the Lingen injury this season, didn't help things. And,
it killed things in terms of their vertical passing game up the middle of the field. Again, they weren't anticipating Brandon Lingen missing this entire season.
Right.
And Wozniak is very limited in that area, and Beebe, because of injuries, was limited in that area. Duke Onyanwu is never coming back, and they need vertical pass-catching ability tight ends to fill in for Lingen's shoes next season. So hopefully they're able to address that in recruiting as well.
Yeah, that's the position. And then wide receiver, coming back, you've got a Tyler Johnson who it was his first year playing, but he's not a blazer. He's more of a possession receiver. You've got some redshirt guys that hopefully can come in and contribute. But, I don't think anybody should be terribly comfortable in the passing game. They need some guys that can get separation and be difference makers. I don't think there's really any more to say to that. Like they just have to have some guys step up, because
they need progression to happen.
Right.
And they need these wide receivers to take a step forward. They need it. Because you lost KJ May last season, and you could comfortably, I think, project in that Drew Olatarski is the guy that's going to fill his role. Well, you're going to be losing 61 catches at least, and it's going to be over 100 targets in Drew Olatarski next season. Who steps into those shoes? I don't know.
No, that's
again, it's I don't know if it's not going to be Rashad Still. I'm just looking at Minnesota's leading target guys from this season. Minnesota loses 2 of the 3. Drew Olatarski is going to be gone, and Brian Smith is third on the team, or tied for second on the team in targets, and he only played in 7-8 games. So you have a ton of targets you need to replace. And you're going to have a lot of the same bodies.
Yeah.
So is Hunter Register going to take a step forward? Is Melvin Holland going to emerge from the abyss? Isaiah Gentry going to emerge from the abyss? Are one of the freshmen going to, is Mark Williams going to make an impact at receiver? Right. Drew Himileski, Philip Howard. Again, this is the position in terms of pass catchers that I am worried about, because it's going to be a lot of the same guys. They need Brian Anderson and this offensive staff to get some development from these guys.
I think the one thing that the kind of the elephant in the room that nobody talks about, and I'll willingly criticize Clay's on this. Whenever you heard him talk, and when they asked about the receiving core, he goes, "I'm comfortable with the guys we have." Well, man,
how?
I don't get that. Especially with the production that we saw this year and the inability to get separation. I mean, if you objectively watch these games, those guys struggle to get open. And I know that Mitch had his struggles. I'm not gonna take that away. But in the same respect, like, I watched so many other college football games where guys are so much more wide open relative to what Mitch had to throw into, right? It's not easy. And man, I just don't know how you can confidently say I'm comfortable with this position group, because at this juncture, outside of Lingen, and I guess I don't even know if I could say still. I don't know where I'm comfortable at all in the receiving core.
You know, I'm pretty much there with you. Can you project Tyler Johnson to get better? I think so.
I think so. But he's a possession receiver. That's not really what we're looking for, right?
We have a couple of possession receivers in Rashad Still and Tyler Johnson. I don't know what you deem Eric Carter, but I don't think he's someone that's extremely shifty.
Right.
And that's basically it. I mean, Brian Anderson has always had a very tight wide receiver rotation. Is he going to finally expand that? Is he going to get some fresh blood in there? Because I think he's going to have to. I think that Minnesota eventually does sign a junior college wide receiver, so maybe he's going to be that impact guy. But largely, there's going to be a lot of the same players. So is Brian Anderson going to play some different guys? I surely hope so, because this spring ball, in the next year, in the next 9 months or so, Minnesota's wide receiver development, if you're a Golden Gopher football fan, which you all are listening to this, you're hoping that this is the position group more than any other outside of maybe quarterback that takes the biggest step forward.
Yeah.
And again, it's a large amount of these guys are going to be back. So hopefully that this is a position that takes a step forward heading into the spring.
Okay. So if we're evaluating this offense as a whole, I really have two other things I'd like to touch on, unless you have more. But one is, I think you have to objectively say that this offense did kind of make a step in the right direction. And I know that you can put an asterisk by it with the schedule. But the facts are the facts. They improved. They scored more points. They put themselves in better chances to win, and that's partly why they won 8 games, right? The other thing that you have to look at the season and where they need to improve, probably improve the most, is explosive plays, right? That was something that was significantly lacking outside of, maybe the occasional deep ball that you might connect on. The only place that came from was the running game, and as we touched on, that was largely in part to Shannon Brooks and Rodney Smith doing much of that on their own. And they have to find ways to manufacture this. We've kind of beat this to death, but they have to find ways to get explosive, longer yardage plays, because that's the only way that they can continue to have this run-first identity and keep people honest.
I agree. When you look at Football Study Hall's 5 factors, one of their factors is explosiveness. And you look at where that is for Minnesota on offense, they rank as the 112th most explosive offense out of 128 FBS teams. So Minnesota is a bottom 20 explosive offense, which I don't think anybody here can disagree with. And as you mentioned, Luke, how is that going to improve? Well, Minnesota is actually going to have to complete a deep shot from time to time.
Yep.
One of my goals this offseason is to go back and watch pretty much every game and kind of just track, like, how many of these 20-plus yard completions were actually caught, or these 20-plus yard attempts were actually caught.
Or how many are actually even taken, right? And, like, when did they have that they'd completely abandon that? And
it seems like Minnesota only runs 5 to 7 yard routes, or they're running a go.
Right.
There has to be some in between there. I mean,
right.
Yes, Drew Wolitarski caught some different kind of balls that were in that intermediate range, but it was always seemingly short or it was a deep shot. And Minnesota is going to have to be able to connect on deep shots next season, because what's Minnesota's offensive identity heading into 2017? They got two pretty damn good running backs, Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks. Yeah. And everybody is going to sell out to try and stop them, because Minnesota is going to be breaking in a brand new quarterback, and he's going to be inexperienced no matter who he is. So that deep, whoever the quarterback is going to have to be on point with his play action game, or else Minnesota's offense is going to see 7, 8, 9 guys in the box. And again, I don't think they have the players on the outside to make a guy miss and take it to the house. I mean, they don't have a guy that can make a bubble screen go. They don't have a guy that can make a slant go right now.
Mm-hmm.
So does that change? I surely hope so. And that quarterback and wide receivers are, if I were them, I would legitimately just be throwing bombs, which is something like like high school-esque, or something you do in the backyard with your buddies. And, I'm going to throw the ball as far as I can, and I want you to go catch it. But honestly, if they can just complete these play-action freaking skinny posts, this offense can be changed, because safeties then have to respect having a guy behind them. And that takes two guys out of the box, and Minnesota can run against 7-man boxes. So I mean, obviously, I don't want them to just strictly work on the deep ball, but again, Minnesota's going to have to complete deep shots if they're going to improve their explosive rating, because that does wonders for these running backs. Again, it improves your explosiveness rating, yes, but it takes more guys out of the box so Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks can actually have room to work with, which is just an outstanding idea for this offensive line and this offense as a whole. But for them to do that, Minnesota's going to have to be able to complete deep shots and just be more efficient in the passing game as a whole.
All right. I almost think we should just keep this just to an offensive podcast, because at this point, I have a few more things I want to bring up.
Just bring them up.
So here's where I do see some improvement in the passing game that maybe isn't recognized. So the Matt Limegrover, Jerry Kill passing regime was very, very, very conservative, right? You saw a lot of kind of like it was like deep outs, you know, put it only in a position that the offensive player can make a play. Very unlikely a guy can undercut it and take it back. They kind of hesitated to kind of do the short intermediate passing game, you know, but that's a place now that we see them trying to exploit and kind of take what the defense gives them. I think that is a step in the right direction as this program goes, I guess, from my vantage point. But in the same vein, you know, they're not taking a lot of deep ball or not taking a lot of deep shots, and nobody's respecting that pass or that deep passing game. So they're just stacking the box. What do you think? Do you like this approach where Jay Johnson is kind of, you know, trying to nitpick and take what they give you? Or would you like to see it go back to the even more likely more conservative Jerry Kill, Matt Limegrover? Like, we're basically
get out of here with you wanting me to say I want them to be conservative. Get yourself out of here right now.
But I mean, seriously, they run deeper routes, but they were a much lower risk completion.
I want to see an expanded route tree out of a hitch, a deep comeback, and crossing routes.
But like,
because
statistically, look at Leidner, right? He had by far his best completion percentage this year at like 58%, where in years before it's only 51%. And I know that's not a drastic improvement, but in some ways it is, because largely in part to the kind of the passes they're asking him to make, right? Or the throws they're asking him to make. And I don't know. I'm much for taking what the defense gives you, but in the same respect, like, they got to try to find a way to mix it up a little bit.
I mean, again, I just think that this whole offense, I mean, the identity going forward is going to be, if you're a defensive coordinator, stop Rodney Smith, stop Shannon Brooks, and then make the quarterback beat you. And so, again, I've already touched on it. That means you're going to see a ton of man coverage. You're going to see just a ton of 7-8 guys in the box, and you have to be able to beat that with your playmakers on the outside. And when they do get a step or two on the defensive back, the quarterback has to be able to hit that.
Yeah. And so is that projects into the future? Like, at this point, I don't see how that, I don't have a lot of optimism going into that. Right.
Well, I mean, the optimistic side of it is Rashad Steele learns how to, Rashad Steele learns how to go up and get a 50-50 ball, because if that's going to be the case, Minnesota's going to be able to win a lot of these deep shots, because Steele's actually going to be able to go up and get a deep ball.
Yeah, he's got a physical advantage.
Again, he is 6'6" and athletic, but he has really got to work on his timing, and he's really got to work on him being able to get off press coverage. You know, Eric Carter, can he, you know, fulfill some of the shoes that Drew Olatarski's leaving? Again, I have no idea what to expect from Melvin Holland or Isaiah Gentry, and if they're even going to be remaining with the team next year. Again, I don't know that what's going to happen here after the bowl game, but again, I wouldn't be surprised either way. And you're going to have to be putting a lot of eggs in the baskets of these younger guys. You know, is Hunter Register going to be someone that fulfills some shoes there? Is Drew Hemileski, the Marshall product, is he going to come back off injury ready to go and be an explosive playmaking threat? Is Phillip Howard, the speedster from Robbinsdale Cooper, going to be able to do some things? We just don't know. And, you know, was Mark Williams going to be able to do that? These guys are athletically gifted, but are they going to be able to learn the nuances of how to be a receiver, get separation off the line of scrimmage, create separation in your routes, and then go up and get the damn ball?
Is it,
you know,
at this juncture, I think it's safe to say that our best pass catching threat next season is actually Rodney Smith.
I think it's Brandon Lingan, but you can you can make the argument it's Rodney Smith. I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to having two running backs on the field at all times next season, and you have Rodney Smith be Le'Veon Bell. Bell lines up in the slot at wide receiver, I believe somewhere north of 30% of his routes because he is so shifty in open space. And I think it's a thing Minnesota's going to have to explore because, again, you have a largely the amount of the same guys coming back, but you need to be able to create these explosive plays. And if you're not going to be able to do that through deep shots and you continually run these hitches, these outs, these five-yard outs, these deep comebacks, these crossing routes, again, that's things that defenses can game plan for, especially if your receivers are having issues, you know, getting separation and then high-pointing the ball. Just the wide receiver position has to do a lot to help this passing game. But yes, I mean, Mitch Leidner being gone is also going to be a benefit because, again, he was really struggling in the passing game. But again, there's just so much inexperience at quarterback behind him that I have a hard time projecting it's going to be that much better until we can see it actually happen on the game field. Because that was one of the biggest things with Mitch Leidner in his career that'll forever stand out to me is he wasn't able to really take the jump from the practice field to the game field, where in practice I've seen him play like a projected third to fifth round draft pick. But in the games, it just, the lights got too bright or the processor in his head didn't go fast enough and it never translated. So how does that translate for Minnesota's next quarterback is going to be a huge selling point is how does he progress from the game field where everything's controlled? You know, it's just you and your teammates. So you're playing in front of 40,000 plus fans. How do you respond? And each guy's different and it's going to come down to that.
Yeah. I'm really interested to see, I mean, at the end of the day, so we know that Clay's has the commitment to get a contract extension. I'm really interested to see if we end up evaluating him on basically how he can develop over the next year or two or three these position groups.
That is 100% what I'm looking at. That is 100% because I don't have a lot of worries about the defense.
Yeah.
As long as Jay Sovell and Mike Sherrills are there, I don't have a lot of issues. Again, those are two guys that really know how to identify talent along with Clay's on the defensive side of the ball. But it's going to be how does Minnesota evaluate talent on offense here going forward? Because the amount of love that Jerry Kill has in this city, you know, it's quite remarkable. But fans do realize that he left this offense
in shambles, basically.
Like, if you don't like Mitch Leidner, well, then you realize you got to put some of the blame on this offensive coaching staff that was here at the time, and Lime Grover, Zabrowski, and Kill for not having a quarterback in place for 3 years to push Mitch Leidner.
Well, not, but
3 years.
Yeah, but not to mention, I mean, it doesn't end there, right? It's offensive line.
It's wide receiver.
And tight end too. Outside of Lingan, who do you have at tight end? I mean,
you have a bunch of blocking guys.
Yeah.
I think Colton Beebe is more than that when he's healthy, but again, he's not healthy.
Yeah.
I think Bryce Witham can be that, but he's young and he needs to learn how to really be a blocker yet. And then I don't know what Cole Keefe is going to provide just yet, but I know that he's someone that Rob Reeves was really high on both sides of it. And he's someone that Minnesota redshirted this season. So how does he come and look in the spring? So again, this is going to be what I think Clay's is going to be evaluated. How quickly can he turn around the offense? Because it's clear the defense is in very good hands for at least the foreseeable future in my eyes. I feel very confident about the talent there. They have to start to replenish things at defensive line. But this offense needs to get some revitalization. They need to get some consistent play from their quarterback. They need to get just much improved play at the wide receiver position. And they need to find a pass-catching tight end outside of Brandon Lingan, and then how does the offensive line continue to come along?
Okay, let's close this with this question. So looking back over, you know, I don't love to lump Tracy Clay's and Jerry Kill together, but for the sake of argument, let's do that, right? So during that era, the Clay's Kill era, is this arguably the most unsure or pessimistic you've been about the offense in your time covering the team?
No, absolutely not.
When were you?
You get I would say probably, heading into last season, I was pretty pessimistic.
How about Pat? Okay, let's split it up. We know the running game, right? We know that is in good hands with the two running backs. We are a little bit of a question mark on the offensive line, but we have some good data to show us that they're able to, you know, identify holes and injuries aside. We hope that they can make improvements there, right? Because they've kind of proved that, you know, they were able to find some guys to stop gap and fill things. But like receiving game, you know, quarterback, you know, just the passing game in general, have you been more unsure or pessimistic about this passing game?
No. I'm still optimistic to an extent because, again, you do get a change at quarterback, which I think can go a lot of different ways. Again, if that quarterback can be someone that can take care of the ball in key spots and can be someone that can complete a deep shot, you know, I think that's going to be an upgrade. I think if Rashad still can figure out how to catch a deep ball, to position himself, to get the footwork down, and to go up and be 6'6 in an athlete, I think that changes the dynamic of things. You know, maybe I'm unrealistic, but I'm expecting some things from Drew Hamileski next year. I'm expecting some things from Philip Howard next year. Whoever the junior college wide receiver is that they're expecting, I'm expecting things from him next season. You know, is Brian Anderson going to finally open up his wide receiver rotation outside of four or five guys? Again, Minnesota was traveling multiple walk-on wide receivers over Gentry and Holland, and while Gentry, you know, has been battling some injuries, you know, what's the reason you're traveling Matt Morse over Melvin Holland? I mean, you can tell me, you know, maybe it's work ethic or something like that. But again, you can do that for a game to prove a point. But really, you're going to play Matt Morse over Melvin Holland? Like, come on. And then at tight end, Brandon Lingan being healthy next season, potentially, hopefully, knock on wood, is going to be healthy. So I think that's going to be a change as well. So how does Minnesota be able to combat all those things? Again, I think if they can just find a deep play action game, and then if Brian Anderson can get some separation from these receivers, get them to work on these deep balls, I think you can see it. I mean, again, and this is one of the things, like we talked about it to open the show. Minnesota's won 8 games, 3 out of the last 4 seasons for the first time in 100 years. Yeah. Minnesota just went 8-4 on the season. They won 5 Big Ten games. Yeah, it didn't end the way we wanted it to end. Well, I'm well aware, folks, but again, this is an offense that I still think has a lot of things in place where it can be better next season.
And we got to be honest that it was pretty good. They scored 30-some points a game, and go ahead, you can argue schedule, but you still have to produce, and they were able to produce. And they were darn good in Big Ten play as well. I will say this, Ryan, from an offensive perspective, I got to imagine from covering this team, the spring ball is probably going to be one of the more entertaining.
It's going to be the most interesting. It's going to be the most interesting spring ball I've watched. And this is going to be my seventh year covering this team. So I started when Jerry Kill got here. And I think it's going to be the most interesting to see. Obviously, a large part of that is due to who the hell's the quarterback.
Yeah, right.
Because is it Seth Green? Is it Demaryius Croft? Again, I refuse to say Mark Williams until I see it with my own two eyes that he's actually playing quarterback. Again, Clay's can keep talking him up all he wants at quarterback, but folks, he's still practicing as a wide receiver.
Right.
So you know, how does that play out? We know what we're getting at running back. You look at tight end. You know, I don't know that Colton Beebe is going to be healthy by the time the spring comes around. So how does that play out? What does Coe Keith look like? What does Bryce Witham look like? And you look at this offensive line, I don't anticipate any junior college signings to come in, but you're losing Jonah Persick. So does that mean it's Garrison Wright at your right tackle? Jared Weiler is going to come back healthy. How does the guard position look going forward? You get Connor Olson and Sam Schluter, two highly regarded guys, two very athletic guys. And that's one of the things that I think needs to be talked about more is Minnesota really needs to get more athletic on the offensive line.
Yeah.
They're just and that's where you look at Minnesota's three junior college signings. Donald Green, very athletic. Vincent Calhoun, very athletic. Garrison Wright, very athletic. They need to be more athletically gifted there because they're going against defensive lines that have a bunch of good athletes that are the same size. And some of the times they're just losing the battle because they're less athletic. So that's where you look at Connor Olsen and Sam Schluter, two very athletic guys. You know, they're going to sign Blaze Andres, an athletic guy, Eric Abogie, athletic. Brett Cottrell, I think, is going to be a pretty good athlete. And then whoever they sign from the junior college ranks, they need to continue to get more athletic there. So that's going to be something to watch in spring ball. And obviously at wide receiver, you're replacing a guy that's going to catch likely more than 70 balls for the second consecutive season. There isn't someone that is dialed in there right now to take those targets. Someone has to catch the ball next season because Minnesota is going to be replacing over 100 targets.
Yeah, it's going
to
be largely an open position battle.
And that's where I think Drew Hamileski, Philip Howard, Mark Williams are going to have a chance to break in there. Hopefully Hunter Register makes waves because they're going to need some fresh blood there to step up and get these targets. So I think spring ball offensively, Luke, is going to be one where if you haven't come out and seen a spring ball practice yet, especially if you want to keep an eye on the quarterback position outside of my daily reports on Gopher Illustrated, I think coming out and seeing with your own very two eyes is something that I encourage you to do this spring.
Yeah, I think that it is a good encouragement. I think you've twisted my arm. I'll try and join you out there.
Oh, look at that. Look at that.
All right. I think because we're at 45 minutes, I'll wrap this episode up. We focused solely on the offense.
Luke, what are you doing tomorrow? You want to come back and talk a little defense?
I think we should probably talk some defense, and obviously what's near and dear to my heart, specialists. How about that?
Oh, yes. I'm down. Hey, okay. Emma Carpenter, kicker of the year, my boy.
Yeah, and he totally deserves it. So, guys, thanks for listening, and go Gophers.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.